I decided, as Peter said, that I would concentrate today on the shortest of the readings, actually, and a well-known couple of verses for most people. Paul says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice. D.L. Moody, the 19th century evangelist, commented rather wryly, the only problem with a living sacrifice is that it has a tendency to keep crawling off the altar. We need reminding of what we have promised. And that's why we have a covenant service every year. A few years ago, after hearing a sermon here somewhere about helping the poor, I made a promise to God that I would buy the big issue every week. Not a massive thing, but it was a promise. The other day, it hit me that this had, over time, diluted down to I'll buy a big issue most weeks, and then even worse to I'll buy a big issue when I can be bothered. A trivial example it may be, but I need reminding. I probably need to get back onto the altar. Why should I give myself to God this way? We can summarize what Paul has said in chapters 1 to 11 by looking at the introduction to the covenant service in the Methodist worship book. In the verse that I've just quoted, it says, I appeal to you, therefore. What's the therefore, therefore, as I was always taught to ask. And basically, Paul is saying, because of everything I've said in chapters 1 to 11, therefore, here is the practical action that grows out of that. If we look at the introduction in the Methodist worship book to the covenant service, it says this. The emphasis of the whole service is on God's readiness to enfold us in generous love, not depending on our deserving. Our response, also in love, springs in penitent joy from thankful recognition of God's grace. Let's look at parts of that again. Firstly, the emphasis is on God's readiness to enfold us in generous love. We learned in the first 11 chapters of Romans that the creating God of the universe is love, pure love, compassionate, unconditional, total love for each and every one of us. Secondly, it reminds us, this introduction, that the love is not dependent on our deserving. We've done nothing to earn this love. God, in unmeasurable goodness, sent God in Jesus Christ to teach us, to be our example, and ultimately to die in our place. God in Jesus then rose from death to life. Jesus lives now, loving us and staying with us always. And thirdly, our response also in love springs from penitent joy, from thankful recognition of God's grace. We can do nothing to make God love us more. but we can do everything in gratitude for what God has been doing, is doing, and will do in us forever. So what does it mean to give myself as a living sacrifice? It's an invitation to be part of the story of salvation. A way, in fact, I would say the only way, to actually transform the world. In Romans 12, verse 2, Paul says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your minds." What are we talking about, this transformation of the renewal of our minds? How is it going to affect our lives? Well, I've got three ways here. First of all, prayer. Secondly, attitudes and priorities. And thirdly, service. Prayer is the one thing that marks us out from those without faith in God. Through prayer, we can be transformed by the renewing of our minds. Just listen to this, one of my favourite poems, an extract from Tennyson's cycle of poems, The Idylls of the King, which retell the legend of King Arthur. The Wikipedia entry has this rather good introduction. It says, "The whole work recounts Arthur's attempt and failure to lift up mankind and create a perfect kingdom," and we'll come back to that later, "from his coming into power to his death." Arthur is dying, and he speaks to the only one of the Knights of the Round Table who is still faithful to him and alive. "More things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of. Wherefore, let thy voice rise like a fountain for me night and day. For what are men better than sheep or goats that nourish a blind faith within the brain, if, knowing God, they lift not hands of prayer, both for themselves and those who call them friend? For so, the whole round earth is every way bound by gold chains about the feet of God." I love it because it reminds us that it is this very act of praying that marks us out from the dumb animals, because it reminds us that prayer achieves things. Jesus told us to pray. Jesus prayed to a loving God who heard him and will hear us. And I also love this excerpt because I don't even begin to understand the meaning of the last line, "For so the whole round earth is every way bound by gold chains about the feet of God." I don't always understand prayer either, but I pray as my Lord did and as he told me to, and because it seems to transform. Our attitudes then, and our priorities. Do not be conformed to this world. The J.V. Phillips version of the New Testament, his translation, puts it rather neatly like this: do not let the world squeeze you into its own mold. Do not let the world squeeze you into its own mold. One of the many things that tries to squeeze us into its mold is consumerism. It is seductive, and I have picked it out for mentioning here because it seems so harmless. But is it? Consumerism. Thousands of advertisements battering us so that we say, "I need stuff. I need more stuff. I need even more stuff." And let's face it, it is the drug of choice for most of society. But it destroys life. It destroys life through debt. It destroys the planet through excess extraction of resources. And through that, it contributes to climate change. And it doesn't result in happiness. More infectious than COVID, it takes more than a vaccine to get rid of it from our minds. Frank L. Crouch, the dean of a theological seminary in Pennsylvania, says, "Not being conformed to this world is a tall order. It takes transformation, renewal of the mind, to detach ourselves from the world's attempts to occupy us with things that do not matter. We have to turn our lives over to God. Then we can become free." The Anglican Collect for Peace puts it like this: "O God, the author of peace and lover of concord, in knowledge of whom stands our eternal life, whose service is perfect freedom." Whose service is perfect freedom. Talking about service, the covenant prayer, which we are shortly going to be asked to say together, is mainly about committing ourselves to service. It says, "Lord, put me to this, put me to that." So I've translated that, if you like, to three T's. All sermons must have 3 points in them somewhere beginning with the same letter. So I've got the three T's: time, talents, and, apologise for this one, tenors. And by that I mean money, not Alfie Bow. Firstly, time. Many at Hind Street give up some of our free time serving various charities and political action groups, and also serving within the church community. Others, through family commitments, illness, age, cannot volunteer for anything, and they are no less valued members of our church family for that. But for those not in that category, we could ask ourselves, where can I help? Could I do something? Could I do more? Talents. After a church member wrote in recently and offered his services to the church as a photographer, should we need him, we decided to ask you, and we're going to do this soon, if you wish to tell us what your talents are. Knitting, playing a musical instrument, phoning housebound people, organising things, origami, anything. It may be a way that you could serve the church community. But just as important is service outside the church. I looked up volunteering in London on the internet last night. I think I got about 20 million replies. There is always a desperate need for volunteers, even more so now because of the COVID epidemic, where they're asking for volunteers totally unskilled to volunteer to help and steward in the vaccination centres. So many things. And lastly, tenors, £10 notes, money. Well, should I just skip past this? A bit embarrassing, sorry, we can't. The Finance Committee, in its last report, has forecasted a deficit for this financial year of £126,000. That is assuming that we do not get back to the letting situation that we had pre-COVID. But even if we do return to that income level, we've been running an annual deficit for quite a few years now, and it kind of teeters around perhaps £30,000 sometimes, with our total giving being less than £100,000. Well, you say, we've got an expensive building to maintain. No. The income from lettings over the last 5 years has paid not just for maintenance of the building, but also our gas, our water, our electricity, our insurance, our caretaking, and our cleaning. And we made a profit of £5,000. That means that we, the family here, the church family, are not even paying our way for basic church costs. We all need to think about this, each and every one of us. Some members give sacrificially. Do I? Where we are giving, say, £10 now, we really need to be giving £13. And some of us are unable to do that. So some others of us will need to give more. A question about giving then. Does my giving affect my lifestyle? If it doesn't affect my lifestyle, I would suggest it's not really giving at all. Am I basically tipping God in the way I tip a waiter, giving God my loose change? So, should I be giving more? Being a living sacrifice then. I stated earlier that presenting ourselves as a living sacrifice was, I believe, the only way to actually transform the world. Remember King Arthur's attempt and failure through goodness to lift up mankind and create the perfect kingdom. Okay, that's fiction. But let's look at the real world. Throughout history, men have had ideas to make the world a better place. Picking at random, you'd say Oliver Cromwell, Karl Marx. But all that happens is that one power elite replaces another. Oppression continues with different oppressors. Even tragically, within the church historically, while at grassroots level, beautiful consequences have grown out of the sacrificial lives of men and women throughout history. But so often at the higher levels, there has been corruption, self-interest, power-seeking men, all but destroying the gospel message. And today, look at the high ideals of the United States Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Where have these ideals ended up this week? With an unhinged, narcissistic president persuading people to follow the most appalling actions. As Peter said, I wanted us to sing the last hymn we sang because it summed up so nicely. Despite the fact that Christ has come, 2,000 years of wrong have rolled on, and man, and it is man, isn't it? Let's face it, at war with man, hears not the love song. So, can the world be transformed? Certainly not by political systems or organizations, only by individuals from St. Francis, Martin Luther King, Pope Francis, to people like you and people like me, who turn their lives over to God and are thus empowered to love their neighbors as themselves, to turn the other cheek, to walk the extra mile, who do not repay evil for evil, and who even love their enemies, who say to God, I offer myself as a living sacrifice. I am no longer mine, but yours. And who, whenever they find they have crawled off the altar, quickly and quietly climb back on and try again. Amen.